KBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. A mass shooting in Nashville. 28-year-old former student, the Nashville pre-K through 6th grade private school, where shots killed 3 9-year-old children and 3 adults. Officers shot and killed the shooter, now identified as Audrey Hale, from the Nashville area.
This is the ultimate crime, when school children and caregivers are the victims of senseless gun violence.
Nashville District Attorney Glenn Funk, all 3 adult victims killed were in their 60s. Calling on Congress to pass his assault weapons ban, President Biden at the White House.
We have to do more to stop gun violence. It's ripping our communities apart, ripping the soul of this nation, ripping at the very soul of the nation.
Israel's National Labor Union called off a nationwide strike after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced a pause to his judicial reform plans. Reforms sparked months of protests across Israel. This is ABC News. Contamination fears in Philadelphia's water supply.
Philadelphia officials trying to calm a nervous city after this weekend's chemical spill into the Delaware River in Bucks County to the north. Mike Carroll, Deputy Managing Director for Philadelphia's Office of Transportation, Infrastructure, and Sustainability, says for now the water is fine through tonight.
We have enough water to sustain safe use for drinking, cooking, all purposes through at least 11:59 p.m.
Still, residents are stocking up on bottled water by the caseload. Officials promising more updates on any sign of contamination. Derek Dennis, ABC News.
Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell issuing a statement saying he's glad to be home, thankful for the well wishes he received. He's 81 years old, now out of physical therapy for a concussion and a fractured rib suffered in a fall at a Washington hotel earlier in the month. No word on when he plans to return to the Senate chamber. Andy Field, ABC News.
Great to listen to while having a Liney's and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media. And don't forget the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Disabled voters say local election leaders in Wisconsin are breaking federal law during early voting. Advocates say early voting poll workers are incorrectly telling disabled voters they cannot have someone else return their absentee ballots for them. The special election for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District has statewide implications. Democrat Jody Habish-Sinkin says a win for her would safeguard against a Republican Senate supermajority.
That will allow the legislators in control of the state Senate to do what they were threatening back in November, which is to start impeachment proceedings against Governor Evers, Josh Cowell, even Dane County judges and the like.
Habish-Sinkin and Republican Dan Knodel appeared on the Upfront TV show yesterday. In sports, the Bucks are at Detroit tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
Ridley, croonersmn.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, didn't cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events. And today we have a really awesome lady coming on, Sandy Whitehawk, who I've met many years. I, being an adoptee, and there's a documentary about her called Blood Memory, but she just wrote a book, and so we're going to discuss that too. Before we do that, we're going to have the Lieutenant Governor do a quick update for us, and I'm here with Zoe. And Zoe, we have another shooting on our hands here in Turtle Island.
Yeah. Really intense. I'm just reading about it now. I was driving all day, so I didn't even know what happened, but looks horrible. I mean, there are children that have been murdered, along with a couple of school officials, I believe.
Yeah, it's amazing, Zoe, and you know, we don't want to get deep in the woods, but a lot of people have talked about it, but we have to mention it for sure. Me being a former school teacher, that you know, the Republicans want to save the children from trans, gay people, mm-hmm. BIPOC people. They don't want their children to learn anything about their history because it might be bad for their psyche to know that white people slaughtered 50 million people across Turtle Island, but yet they can't do anything about these guns. I mean, who goes hunting with an assault rifle? I want to know that right now.
Right, exactly. And I mean, this is really complicated, you know? I mean, it's complicated and it's not, right? Like, it should be pretty clear cut that we need better gun law regulation, especially when it comes to our children, you know? But this was a private Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee. And they're saying that the person that the gun woman was a former student. But I believe she was around 28 years old. So an adult, which I think is, you know, lately it's been, we've seen a lot of students engage in this type of violence against each other, and to see an adult do it is just, it's horrible. And it's really just takes us back to like Sandy Hook. I mean, I feel like that should have been the end, right? Like, we should have woken up and really passed some really solid regulation. I don't know.
If you care about children, like the Republicans are trying to protect children from transgenders, all these ridiculous things that I know your generation, even the generation, my generation, it thinks is ridiculous. And people are people. And, you know, we know as natives, Two-Spirit, which means, you know, they walk in two worlds, were so important to Native communities. And along with medicine men, they were the first to be killed by these so-called settlers. But let's not get into those deep woods right now. And what we should probably do right now, Zoe, is get an update from the lieutenant governor prior to this. So she had no warning about this happening, but she's going to give us an update on what's happening at the Capitol. So let's take a listen to Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan.
Anin, this is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I'm joining Native Roots Radio with an update from the Walz Flanagan administration. I am incredibly proud of the One Minnesota budget we've put together, the budget that I've worked towards my entire life, a budget that invests in centering children and families, expanding economic security, protecting health and safety, and strengthening infrastructure and communities across the state. And with the updated February forecast, we have an opportunity to revisit some of the important proposals and investments and go bigger. This week, Governor Walz and I unveiled our revised budget proposal with an additional $1.5 billion in investments. Our revised budget includes increased investments in public safety. The governor and I traveled across the state hearing from mayors, police chiefs, fire chiefs about what they needed to keep Minnesotans safe. Together, we crafted a $300 million plan that would fund every police and fire department in the state. Our revised budget nearly doubles that, bringing it to over $500 million. And because we know that local government's needs don't stop there, we're increasing our investment in local government aid. We're also expanding our proposal to address opioids and addiction by $160 million for a total of $220 million. This includes creating grants for overdose and violence prevention, funding youth mental health and substance use disorder treatment, supporting naloxone administration training and supplies, and establishing up to 15 safe recovery sites across Minnesota. We're increasing the funding available for replacing lead service lines to help communities across the state afford costly updates to increase safety. And we're increasing investments in Minnesota's higher education system to continue growing a talented and educated workforce right here at home. And it's because of the continued hard work and economic resilience of Minnesota workers and families that we're able to include these increased investments. At the core, our revised budget proposals bolster our budget's ability to support safe and vibrant communities in every part of the state. We also had an incredibly powerful signing ceremony for a piece of legislation that is deeply personal to me, universal school meals. Nearly all of us have spent cumulative hours in our school cafeterias, spending time with our friends, catching up on homework, and eating a hot meal before we head back to class. But for too many of our young people, the school cafeteria has been a place of shame and stigma. For our students with different colored lunch tickets, for our students with lunch debt, our students who skip meals. Hunger is often invisible. It looks like a distraction or tiredness or disinterest. It can be easy to miss the students who are falling behind because they're trying to learn on an empty stomach. But we know that 1 in 6 children go hungry in Minnesota, and that 1 in 4 food insecure children don't qualify for financial help with school meals. So to our decision makers who believe they've never met someone who has experienced hunger, hi, my name is Peggy Flanagan, and I was 1 of 6 in Minnesotans to experience hunger. I am one of the children who grew up with a different colored lunch ticket because my family utilized free and reduced price lunch. What used to be then called food stamps back in the day, right, now known as SNAP, we used to put food on the table. And even with that assistance, there were nights where I ate dinner and my mom would say that she simply wasn't hungry. And it wasn't until I was an adult and I was a mom that I realized that she wasn't telling the truth. She was trying to protect me from the reality of our food insecurity, that she was hungry. By providing free breakfast and lunch to all students, we are removing barriers and removing stigma in the lunchroom. We are helping family pocketbooks, especially for those 1 in 4 who don't qualify for financial assistance with school meals. We're leading with our values that no child should go hungry for any reason ever, period. This is an investment in the well-being of our children, as well as an investment in their academic success. I am so grateful to everyone who has worked hard to get this across the finish line and support our young Minnesotans across the state. So stay tuned as we continue to work hard to pass transformational policies that improve the lives of all Minnesotans, especially our littlest Minnesotans. Jimmy Gwetch, Pina Gigi, and back to you.
Hey, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Always great to have an update on, and such a good update on such a sour day with what's happening, Zoe, with the shootings. So we put our prayers out to the family. And again, Pina Gigi to Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, me Gwetch to Peggy. And, you know, our hearts go out with all the families who've lost people today, you know. Definitely be putting some tobacco down for them, too.
Good one. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And up next, Sandy Whitehawk. We'll be talking about her journey as an adoptee and a documentary and the book she just wrote about it. So we're excited to have her on. We'll be right back after this short break. Please, please stay with us.
The Senior Linkage Line is a free statewide service of the Minnesota Board on Aging in partnership with Trellis. I have volunteered with seniors nearly 15 years, working alongside their compassionate team. I am honored to partner with Trellis as we help our elders find housing, compare costs of Medicare prescriptions, and learn how to avoid fraud and scams targeting seniors. We help our elders optimize well-being as they age, and we can help you too. Reach out today at trellisconnects.org.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Why must the world be so cold? They've gone against what was told. Thinking rape is cool? Think about it. They think it's not wrong. Violence against women, the rape, the abuse, the emotional, physical. They all hold the hate. Think about it. Is it right or wrong? What attracts you? I'm not saying no names, but you laugh. Talk about it like nothing is wrong. Think about it. They all hold the hate. Gotta stop the violence. Stop the hate. Think about it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This segment of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Woman Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, thank you, Zoe. We are here with Sandy, and Sandy, you're on mute right now. Sandy Whitehawk, who was in the documentary Blood Memory, and she just wrote a book, too. And Sandy, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're a little under the weather, but you know, I really appreciate you and all you've done. And as an adoptee myself, all the work you've done and putting out all this good information to our allies and to our Native community.
Well, thank you, Robert. I know I told George, I said, I got one more thing to do today. And he goes, what? I go, yeah, it's for Robert, though. We'll do anything. As I think it's so awesome that you have this radio time or stream time, whatever they call it today. And yeah, my voice is on its last leg, and I'm really kind of toasted, but I am really happy to be here. Thank you for asking me. You can ask me anytime.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So you just wrote a book here. Can you tell our audience a little bit about it and the title?
I just sat down one night and wrote it. Hey.
Oh, you can help me with mine then. Oh,
it took quite a few years, but it sounds funny when I've heard people say that you just wrote a book. I go, yeah, I just sat down and 2 days it was out. Here it is.
A child of Indian race, and we're on the radio all over Turtle Island here, so I'm going to read that. A child of Indian race, a story of return. And yes. That is basically your life story, correct?
It is. It's so interesting because this is how long it took me to write this. In 2009, I went in 2008, but I was in the hospital for 5 months from 2008 to 2009. And while I was in there, a journalist contacted me and she said, have you ever thought of writing your story? And I was in a extended care, so I was better in many ways, but not well enough to not be monitored. And I said, well, actually, I got some stuff stuffed away because one other journalist prior to her had encouraged me. So I had just written a few things that didn't really have. But then when I went and looked at it, I had a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so important, Sandy, for people, you know, to write their story. And I heard from writers and editors saying that somebody needs to hear that's your story, and especially of what you've done in your leadership with adoptees and also with the attack on ICWA that's happening here. It's really important to get this out in the forefront again.
Yeah. The last part was the hardest to write because it hadn't happened yet. So I couldn't really, it hadn't like all come together because I wrote it in three parts, truth, healing, and reconciliation. And when I started my work around gathering adoptees together to share their lived experience with those who make decisions about child removal, judges, lawyers, social workers, mental health workers, I wanted them to hear what it was really like after we were placed in these homes, because I was not hearing hardly any stories of love, kindness. I was hearing stories of abuse, neglect, and a lot of it. And then aside from that, so much psychological pain of not understanding who we are as an Indian person. We can act. We can mimic white behavior. We can mimic all the stuff in and around how moving in and around white society, but we're never white and we never fully can settle into that because we're just not. And it wears on us because we don't know what. Go ahead.
You are absolutely right. It really does wear on us. And I know as an adoptee, I always had that kind of gut feeling when people would talk to me with my white parents that matter of fact, I don't know if I ever told you this, but one of my aunts introduced me as Bob and Mary's adopted son.
Yeah.
And, you know, put that label on me. It's like, whoa, that was okay.
always so often separating us. It's a lifetime of separation. If some of the adoptees have bio siblings, they will always hear, oh, you know, this one looks just like his Uncle John.
Yeah.
And this one even laughs just like her Aunt Betty. Oh my God, you should hear the two of them as the same. And they'll go on and on because it's fun to see that genetic, thing in the next generation. Well, we never hear that.
Right.
And that's another psychological separation.
Well, it's funny. They always told me I stood like Uncle Marty, which I'd never met and who passed on like in the late 80s. And I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool.
Exactly. My uncles told me that I reminded them of my Aunt Gladys. After I met them, we were visiting one time, and I was just going off and talking. My ADD had clicked in. I was just chatting away. And they were laughing at me. And, I mean, not in a mean way at all. You know, just kind of getting a kick out of me, I think. And kind of like going, whoa, we got a live one here. But anyway, all of a sudden they turned to each other and started talking in Lakota. And then I said, what? And they go, oh, we're just saying how much you remind us of your Aunt Gladys. And I go, oh, yeah? How so? And they go, she's really spacey. I was like, oh, okay, well, I belong.
Well, another one too is a physical characteristic for me. They go, oh, you have big ears like Uncle Marty too. It's like, oh, I better grow my hair.
So our family, who has wondered about us all those years, mm-hmm. finally get to see us. And they see their family in us. So it's healing for them as well to fill that gap of wondering where we've been, how we were treated, and all of that. So I, it's a lot. So when I wanted social workers to hear that adoption goes against basic child development. We need the mirroring of our relatives. That's one of the stages of growth. You know, if you're in psych 101 or developmental psych, that's like they talk about that the first half of the semester, the importance of your image, and yet it goes against. So we have still a lot of work to do around that area of focusing on child preservation and not focusing on how do we get this child a home to live in. Because now that with our study as well that we've done, we've proven in that adoption is not a guaranteed safe option for placement. You know, we cannot guarantee that they'll be any safer in the home we're placing them in than where they were.
You know, we're going to take a break here, and we're only going to make you suffer another quick segment. Sandy, I really appreciate you coming on. But I remember asking you years ago when Blood Memory first came out, and we were talking about the mother and the parent that was, you know, because we have this epidemic here in big time in Minnesota about foster care and foster homes, too. What can we do to help the mother? And I know you know what you said to me, and I repeat it all the time, and that's give them the money that you would give to these foster parents, and you would see things really, really change. So, Sandy, I really appreciate you being on. I want to talk about a little bit more about the book, and we're going to take a quick break here. Really appreciate you being on. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Dad, this is fun. I didn't think I'd like kayaking.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, but I think it's time to head back in.
Okay. Can we come back?
Sure. Hey, be careful getting out of the boat.
It's a kayak, Dad.
I'm going to return the kayak.
Can we walk home?
How about a taxi?
It's a short fare from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen of the Green News Report and the Bradcast. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Ken Hankland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our live call-in talk show airing every Saturday from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights you need to know to live and age well. Each week, we talk with guests who provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and self-care for caregivers, and help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 on AM 950 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing and a summer evening. It's everybody over for Sunday dinner and your family sleeping in their own beds at night. Making home affordable is a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Cloudy tonight with a low of 19, then partial sunshine on Tuesday with a high of 37. There's no better time than now to experience the new Maggie's Lounge at Crooner's Supper Club. Serving up light fare and cocktails, no concert ticket is required. Crooner's Supper Club, just north of 694 off Highway 65 in Fridley. Croonersmn.com.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic, honoring health and tradition.
Awesome. Hey, we have Sandy Whitehog on tonight. She was in the documentary Blood Memory and has a book that just came out. And Sandy, let's talk a little bit about the book and how important, not important, but how much of a conversational piece and your last paragraph of your book is. Do you mind, we talked a little bit about this, maybe reading it?
Sure. Let me first say that the book, people, like my niece, when she started reading it, said, "I just finished the first three chapters. It's so sad." And I always say, keep reading. There's three sections: truth, healing, reconciliation. So it really is about how we can reach out to our relatives, how we can use our lived experience to educate on adoption and foster care. But also the real strong focus is our relatives still looking to come home. Mm-hmm. As you read this book, there is an adoptee sitting in fear, but longing to look for their Indian family. An Indian mother is needlessly losing permanent custody of her child to adoption. Someone is on a tribal Facebook page asking about relatives. Someone is sending me an email asking where to start looking for their Indian family. A grandparent is staring out a window, wondering about their grandchild, wondering who she looks like. Is she safe? Praying to get to see her before leaving this realm. And through their prayers and prayers of those in ceremony, we find our way. Wachoachage, Akiungupi, generation after generation, we are coming home.
Yeah. You know, when I contacted my birth mother, you know, she was 15 and a lot of trauma that she never really dealt with. And it was really an uncomfortable conversation. And we were leaving after talking to her for a whole hour, wondering if we would ever talk to her again. And what she said was, a week before I got your letter, I was looking out my back window and praying to God that I would meet you one day before I die. So that made it all better.
Yes. And see, when we come home, that pain that they never talked with anyone about, we're a mirror of that. And then we have our own pain as well. So there's a lot of pain. And nobody has written or talked about how do we mend that and heal that, which has been my work.
Yes, it is. And it's amazing. Where can somebody pick up this book? And I just want to, I noticed I didn't mention the title. It's A Child of the Indian Race, A Story of Return by Sandy Whitehawk.
They can get it in many at the Birch Bark bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Order it online on Amazon. It's not even $20. $18.95, man.
Right on. And I can swing by and get you an autograph for you too if you get one.
That'd be awesome. We could meet for coffee and I'll sign it.
Right,
it's even
on.
Got pictures.
Oh, cool. That's cool. Well,
yeah, Minnesota, I just want to shout out to Minnesota Historical Press is mm-hmm. what published it. So I really appreciate that they took interest in this and saw the importance of it and took me under their wing and edited it and published it.
You know, one of the most amazing podcasts I ever heard, and I've turned it on to everyone, and I don't know if you ever heard that, but Finding Cleo. Did you ever hear that? It's an award-winning 10-part documentary up in Canada. And the basic story is all this lady's kids were taken away from her. And the oldest son, who was 8 years old, said that he would come back for his sister, Cleo. And she was adopted out in New York, and there was all the, and she had died at 13, and there was all these things, like she got killed hitchhiking trying to come back, because a lot of the adoptees from Canada were adopted out in the United States.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing documentary. And, you know, and to speak of, you know, audio documentary. So if you're just into exercising or whatever, it's something good to listen to. But where can we get your documentary? Because that would be something great to sell in our store, too.
Right. They could go to online. It's bloodmemorydoc.com.
Yeah, and we won't get deep in this right now, but we are fighting with ICWA and, you know, to keep ICWA and supporting ICWA, but a lot of that blood memory has to do with a Native person who was a lawyer that was kind of against ICWA, and it was really bizarre, but it was really, you could kind of see that he was like kind of butthurt that he couldn't get his kids enrolled. It seemed like the underlying jealousy kind of thing going through the whole documentary with him.
And he's part of the team in the Supreme Court case as well.
You're kidding.
No. His goal was to do this.
Right.
See, now my book is called A Child of the Indian Race. The reason that it's worded that way and in italics is that's how I'm referred to in my adoption papers.
Oh, wow.
Said child is a child of the Indian race. And so it's kind of the timing of it's interesting because race, ICWA, is not a race-based law, the word race isn't even in the law.
Right.
This now can be a top. We can always use the title to say, this is completely wrong. They should have never referred to me in this way. If they were going to say anything, they needed to say, said child is an enrolled member, because I was enrolled already at 18 months old, is an enrolled member of the Rosebud Sioux tribe. And so, just a little side thing about the name, the title, and that's all in my book, my pictures of my adoption records and the papers and all of that.
You know, in the story of return and how you've had these powwows over the years from people all over Turtle Island and, you know, Canada and the United States come to these and celebrate in a good way returning home.
Yep. And being welcomed by a community that they don't live in, but our community doesn't know any kind of boundaries whatsoever. So when our Indian community here, after that ceremony and everyone is brought in to shake hands and hug, you know, they say, welcome home. And so many adoptees have had such, you know, profound healing or started their healing process from there, finally being acknowledged and recognized. And it's just been incredible. And so we haven't had it because of COVID for 2 years, but we're planning it this year.
Oh, I'd like to help with that planning. When are you thinking?
At first we thought September. The reason we've always had it in November is that's Adoption Awareness Month.
Right.
Well, we don't have to stay there, but people have been used to that for 17 years.
Yeah.
We've had it. But I'll put you in our next email streams of the two other planners, and you can come and when you are able, and you can help with our planning.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I would vote for November because I don't know. I think the third week of September is my general counsel for Ho-Chunk, and I got to be there.
Just yes, because, you do. You know,
I'm a big shot now.
I love that about you. Isn't that you're a big shot.
And I appreciate all your help, too, when I ran a couple of years ago. It's already been, in July, it'll be 2 years that I'm a representative of Ho-Chunk Nation. That's crazy. You know,
somebody asked me about you because they didn't know you. They said, we don't know him. Do you know? And you seem to know him. I go, yep. I'm going to tell you something. An adoptee knows what it's like to live without culture. He will fight for anything that we need to keep and maintain, and we'll do it without, you'll be fearless. And because we do know what's like, we know how harmful that is. We know it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It leaves a scar, a deep, deep scar. So whatever decisions need to be made for our maintaining our identity, you're on it. You got a strong heart.
I appreciate that. And I should tell you and text what I've been working on, because it kind of does fit in that, but I don't want to really get into it here. But, you know, in the background here, and it has to do with Minnesota and Ho-Chunk and housing and a lot of fun things. So I appreciate those words because I didn't know that, but that's what I've been doing.
Exactly. Yep. I didn't know either. I'm a big mouth sometimes, and I just said, hey, let me tell you what I want to know, what I want you to know.
Yeah. That's our gift, because we do know we are kind of from both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
We do know what possibly the boundaries that maybe some of our relatives that have been going through trauma all their life in different ways, that we can help in different ways too.
Exactly. We did get, and we're like incredible negotiators, because we've had to do that for a lifetime. And we had to negotiate something that wasn't ours and wasn't comfortable for a lifetime. And when we can heal and balance that within our value system as Native people, you know, then we can use that gift. We're kind of bilingual that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, I really feel, and this is a general statement, you can help me out, Sandy, but I really feel like all the adoptees that I've really ever had any kind of friendship or relationship with is, are very, very sensitive, and in a good way. They can feel yeah. other people's pain because of all of what we've gone through.
Exactly. Yep, I agree.
Yeah, so we're all a bunch of crybabies. No.
let us remember that our tears are our strength. Deep, right. A deep, powerful strength. And, man, I did cry, though, for probably the first couple years a lot. Do we have time for a story?
Yes, we got a minute. Sandy, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but if you want to talk about it, and then we'll let you go in the last segment.
I'll tell you a tear story. I'll try to be really fast.
Okay.
The first time I was at an Indian AA meeting, I didn't know any of the people, and was up in Ho-Chunk territory somewhere. I can't remember where. This is early 90s. It comes to me, and I realize, I just start saying, hi, my name is Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. I just reunited with my family, and within three sentences, I'm bawling, literally bawling, and I can't stop. And two things, I'm in an AA meeting, so I know I'm okay. But it was, somebody brought sage over. And this is what happens when we put one foot in the other and begin our healing. There had been a conference, and I didn't know about this conference. We had just, at the last minute, heard about this Indian AA meeting. Well, because it was a conference, there are people from all over there. Over in the corner of the room, this Lakota man stands up. He says, sister, what you're experiencing right now is grief. I'm going to sing a song. And he sang this beautiful song. This wow. story is in the longer story is in the book. But it was the beginning of my understanding that I didn't need to be ashamed of my tears, because I was then told and talked to about what our tears were. Purification and strengthening and sacred, and that they are a gift. I became grateful, but it's hard to cry because it reminds you when you cried alone all the years.
Wow, that was a good story. Thank you so much, Sandy Whitehawk, the author of A Child of the Indian Race, A Story of Return, that you can get from Birch Bark Books or Amazon.com. Thank you, Peeny Gigi, so, so much for coming on. And I'll get you on when your voice is better. Oh, wow. Okay.
See
you. Right.
Thank you.
Peeny Gigi, thank you. Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Judge Janet Protasiewicz is running to provide you with the justice you deserve.
For years, Judge Janet has supported the youth and underrepresented communities.
Judge Janet has strong values for public education and believes in setting our communities up for success.
Judge Janet believes that Native rights are sovereign rights.
Judge Janet understands the importance of issues such as missing and murdered Indigenous women, treaty rights, and hunting and gathering.
Unlike her opponent, Judge Janet not only talks the talk, but walks the walk.
Judge Janet knows the impact that our courts have on our communities, and she will bring integrity and fairness to the court.
Judge Janet Protasiewicz will fight for us. Let's fight for them.
Make a plan to vote by April 4th.
Find your polling place at vote.wisdoms.org. That's vote.wisdoms.org.
vote.wisdoms.org/EV.
Paid for by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin as an in-kind to Janet for Justice.
So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated.
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are.
Great. It sounds like we don't have a plan.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ritz Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl!
Good one, Zoe. Hey, Zoe, wow, I could have talked to Sandy for a long time. Her voice doesn't normally sound that way, so she really was a trooper to come on today, and I appreciate her. Zoe, I want to read the kind of the bio of the book and about Sandy real quick. And I sometimes when we have people on, Zoe, we know we kind of jump into a middle of conversation we might have had a couple months ago, and then our listening audience is like, oh, what's going on here? So I want to read a little bit about her and her book, and kind of from the bio of the book. It says that as an adoptee reconnects with the Lakota family and culture she was born into and nurtures a new tradition that helps others to do the same. In 1950s, when Sandy Whitehawk was a toddler, she was taken from her Lakota family on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Her adoption papers identified her as a child of Indian race, and her adoptive mother never let her forget it, telling her she was unwanted and shaming her for being Indian. Whitehawk medicated her traumas with drugs and alcohol, and at age 28, she gained sobriety and reconnected with her birth relatives. As she learned what it means to be Lakota, she also learned that thousands of Native adoptees shared her experience. Left to negative racial culture complexities as a child with no way to understand what has happened to them. Mentored by a respected elder, Whitehawk began to work with relatives who also had been separated by adoption and foster care, taken away from their families and communities. Fighting through her feelings and feelings of inadequacy, she accepted that she could use her voice as an advocate. Ultimately, Whitehawk founded the First Nations Reparation Institute, an organization that addresses the post-adoption issues of Native American individuals, families, and communities. Whitehawk lectures and presents widely on issues around adoption, and she exposes the myth that adoption is a path to protecting unwanted children for unfit mothers, offering a child a better chance of life. Rather, adoption, particularly a transcendental adoption, is layered in complexities. A Child of Indian Race by Sandy Whitehawk. Just an amazing person, Zoe.
Yeah, really incredible. I mean, she's done so much for the community all across Turtle Island, like you were talking about with her wiping of the tears ceremony. Mm-hmm. She's just done such incredible work, and she also is the founder too of, oh my gosh, I get the name right. The First Nations Repatriations Institute. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. And she has a powwow once a year. She didn't have it during COVID, but people come from all over the country in Canada to reconnect. And me, as an adoptee, really zoned in on people. For the most part, everyone was very welcoming. You always have to be careful, though, because our community sees people that, you know, maybe in their ancestry.com say they're Indian, and they come to a powwow, take a selfie, and then you never see them again. You know?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Yep.
And yeah, so, it's definitely becoming more commonplace too. I don't know if you've seen those ads on TV, even the Ancestry.com ads. So it was funny.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's an amazing thing that if I gave effort to join the community and the community came back and they saw me as somebody that shows up, that's around, and really responds and respects the community. One of the first things I did when I was a teacher, Zoe, was I asked for an all-Native homeroom. Our kids had a place to land for whatever reason, you know, they had support from the morning, very beginning of the morning and on, and it was amazing. I taught at a school that had 125 to 200 Native Americans through 9 through 12, which is a small amount with the school being 2,000, but you still needed to support them, and it was great that administration supported that for me. All they really had to do is get the counselors on board, and they were all about it, and move a few things around, and I had a homeroom with Native Americans, and then the other Native American teachers jumped on, and then I was kind of pushed into having just a freshman, and at first it was like, oh, geez, and then after, and then thinking about it, I'm going, well, I'll know these students for all 4 years. That's a great thing to get them right from the beginning and have them know, which hopefully they did know, that I really support them. If they needed to come smudge, if they needed a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I had all that stuff there. And, you know, you're not that far away in a lot of respects from high school, but that's really important to have some sort of support or some people to call your own, whether you're a band geek or a theater geek, mm-hmm. you know, or a Native geek.
Yeah, and high school is not easy for Native kids, you know, especially, I think. Yeah, I was just reminiscing with my sister the other day about high school, too, because, you know, we spent some of the time at the same high school. And, yeah, really important for all children to mm-hmm. have teachers and people in their lives that are adults outside of their family that make sure that they don't fall through the cracks, you know. I definitely saw that in action in my school. I wish I would have seen it more, you know, but again, we really didn't have many Native teachers in Detroit Lakes High School. I think it's gotten slightly better, but, you know, it's really wonderful to see so much support for kids here too, and so many more Native teachers in classrooms, because, you know, they understand things that other teachers don't, you know, like you're saying, like the need to smudge and, you know, making sure that the kids have food and just checking in with them in a way that other people won't be able to, you know.
Well, just another thing too, me being brought up in a different way, you know, with a white family, not at first understanding why my kids wouldn't give me eye contact. And that's, in some nations, that's a form of the opposite of respect. So, you know, to learn those things and to navigate around other communities, because it's not a pan-Indian thing. We're all different, you know. We all mm-hmm. have a lot of the same beliefs, but we are very different. And I know, and hopefully you know, that Ho-Chunk are the best, and I just have to say that before the end of the show here.
Oh, you slowed that in there fast.
Yeah. Thank you for agreeing and not arguing. You only got like 40 seconds. How about those Ojibwe, huh?
Oh gosh, I'm not, no comment, no, just kidding.
Right on. Hey, it's radio. Hey, right on. So hey, Zoe, thanks for doing all the work and behind the scenes and getting this all together and being here and talking about the news today. And also I want to really give a big shout out to Sandy Whitehawk for being on.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project,
transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.